is Ruth chapter 1, and it's on page 267. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, and his wife's name was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they'd lived there for about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she'd been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness, as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." Then she kissed them goodbye, and they wept aloud and said to her, "We will go back with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has turned against me." At this, they wept aloud again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. "Look," said Naomi, "your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her." But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them, and the women exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" "Don't call me Naomi," she told them. "Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Well, this afternoon we are going to look at this first chapter of the book of Ruth. It's the eighth book in the Bible, comes just after Joshua and Judges, and just before the Samuels and Kings, if you are struggling to find it. But before we get into it, we have to talk about a big difference between the time of Ruth and Naomi and what we have today in our society. And that big difference comes to do with the purpose of the family. Today, family is something we value and appreciate as a place we can be ourselves. And at the heart of family relationships are love. That's especially true for the relationship of a husband and wife. And the relationship between husband and wife is built around starting off in a relationship of love together, then perhaps having a family somewhere along the route. But it's less about carrying on the family line than it was in the days we're reading about in the book of Ruth. In the days of Naomi and Ruth, having a descendant was almost the most important part of a marriage relationship. You had to have an heir to carry on the family line, if at all possible. For example, it was the only way to care for the elderly of their day. There were no pensions, there were no savings accounts. You had children who provided for you. And it was of such importance to them that if a husband passed away without providing his wife a child to care for her and carry on his name, then it actually became, we'd barely believe this, it became the responsibility of the brother-in-law to marry her when he'd gone. Their child would then carry on the dead brother's name and provide for the wife. Now, to our ears, that all sounds very weird, but we need to read this first chapter of the Book of Ruth with that in mind and understand their cultural mindset and listen to it as a message of a woman who has become bitter, having lost all her family, with all this in the background, that she doesn't know then what her future holds. That's one great strand of this passage. And then the other that we just get a hint of is that the loving kindness of God is going to prevail. So let's look at this passage together. As I say, a chapter of two strands. And we begin with the thought of bitterness. That theme of bitterness runs through the passage. Naomi uses the word bitter in both verse 13 and then again in verse 20. And it explains something of her mindset throughout this passage. Now, in 2020, we know some great causes of bitterness. These last few weeks, I've watched the news and seen news of hurricanes, of earthquakes like that in Turkey just a week and a bit ago, floods. And now, of course, we're living with a pandemic disease. In this last year, bad things seem to have come along one after another, some all at the same time. And if it's not in the wider world, then it's very easy to understand in our own personal lives how things can get on top of somebody. You're under pressure at work, finance becomes tricky, car breaks down, one of your kids has a problem, crises end up breathing down your neck. And it doesn't have to be a lot of things to get a person down, to make a person feel like life has become bitter. If a spouse or a child comes down with an illness, the whole world can lose its sense of sweetness. Your job becomes vulnerable. Suddenly you have huge anxieties. The world turns bitter very quickly at those sort of points. Doesn't feel as if things are ever going to turn out well. And it can end up leaving you feeling that there's no great hope. Everything is going to struggle from here on in. And it can leave you looking to God, wondering where exactly his promises of love to us have gone. Well, Naomi, in this book of Ruth, in the first chapter, helps to show someone to whom that happened, someone who became bitter. But we're also, as I say, going to see how God used that experience to deepen her character and to show her an experience of the depth of his love and his providence in a most fantastic way as he plans her future. So looking through our passage, what are the reasons for her despair? I've underlined four things in my Bible, each beginning with, well, approximately the letter F. The first one is there in verse one. It was a time of famine in the land. You can understand how with no great supermarkets or storage warehouses, when there was famine, there was no hope of food. And from Naomi's perspective, she's already had to move and lose her homeland to try and find food. Now, that's a huge thing for anyone. But to add to that, of course, it was the promised land that she'd left. So things you can understand were pretty desperate for her. Well, this story is going to see how God chooses to welcome her home again and bring an even deeper, richer harvest in her life. In a life that began at a time of famine. So that's the first step, famine. The second one is family. Since that move, verse 5 tells us that she had lost her husband Elimelech and her two sons. Well, can you imagine how difficult that has been? All three of them died. It's tough dealing with grief once in life, let alone the death of the three closest people to you. And bearing in mind where we began today, our third F, she'd lost much of her future prospect too. Things were looking pretty bleak. Practically in her day, women had a very uneasy role in society. In those days, women were pretty much entirely dependent on their husbands. So financially, it wasn't just that she'd lost her companion in life. When she lost her husband, she'd also lost all financial security. She had no money coming in, no prospect of money in the future. And relationally, she could only see it getting worse, because as she looks at her circumstances, she knows that she won't even be able to support her daughter-in-law who've stayed with her. So we have this extraordinary conversation in verses 11 to 13, showing her trying to persuade the two of them, Orpah and Ruth, to leave her and to go and look for new husbands in their own homeland. So all her life is looking more and more lonely, more and more without any great prospect for the future. And the result is she feels lost. She uses the words in verse 12 to show that she's lost hope. She says, even if I thought there was still hope for me. Now she's referring to perhaps having a new husband at that point, but you get the sense that she's very close to despair. Things have got entirely on top of her. So that's the first three S. Famine, family, and future prospects all seem pretty bleak. The fourth F is a bit of a cheat. It's F for theological. Theological, you could say. She felt God was against her. So in verse 13, she says, it is more bitter for me than you because the Lord's hand has turned against me. She feels she deserves this somehow. She feels that nothing is going to work out, whatever she might plan. Now, that's important, that verse. It's in effect repeated again at the end of verse 20. It is something that lies deep in her. That providence is a very important theme in this book. It's a book that's going to ask the question, how does God work? Does he have plans for people when they're struggling? She clearly felt that she deserved nothing from God except, you get the impression, maybe a bit of his punishment. Was there some sort of sense of guilt for having left Israel in the first place? Maybe. But it's an easy thing to blame yourself when everything is on top of you. Depression has a way of clouding out any hope for the future and making us feel wretched about ourselves. And I perfectly understand what it's like to lose sight of God's love and providence at that point. So the result is, if you look at verse 20, she's tempted to say, don't call me Naomi any longer. Call me instead Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. What she's doing is playing on different names that you could be called in her day and age. Naomi meant pleasant. That was the name she'd been given as a given name. That was where her life had been. But now it's very different. She wants to be called Mara, which means bitter. That explains her sense of mind at the time. And what's more significant, she also uses a particular name for God in that verse 20. It's a name in Hebrew, Shaddai, which means the Almighty. She's making the point that God is the one who's in control of the world that has made her feel bitter. We get a sense from that she hasn't entirely forgotten God, but that actually she can only see a very bleak future under his hand. Now, I was very struck by that it's verse 21, isn't it? Can you imagine it? Your own name making you feel uncomfortable. Not wanting to be called Naomi anymore. The name she'd used all her life. Because her life has got so bad. The Lord, as she sees it, has caused bitterness for her, and she wants to change the name to reflect that. So you can understand. She's lost her homeland. She's faced famine. She's lost her family, her husband and her children. She's losing her prospects. No food, no home, no family to care for her in old age. The line of Elimelech is going to die out. No one there to support her through her older years. All that line going to be cut off. Humanly speaking, we can have huge empathy for her. You could say Naomi has every reason to feel bitter. But in a sense, she's showing just the human side of things. Just like the rest of us, she's got caught up in troubles. And the truth is, she isn't seeing the whole picture. She's got an idea that God is the Almighty, but she's lost her grasp of the real picture of God at work, that theological part. She's grasped a half-truth, the idea that God is in control. But at this point, all she can see is the negative. The Lord's hand has turned against me, or verse 20, 21, the Lord has brought misfortune upon me. She can't see what is starting to happen around her, which is actually very different. And that's the human predicament many people find themselves in. They, when they think of God, don't see the goodness that he wants to offer to them, because they get swamped by the difficulties and struggles that they're having in life. Well, that's the first part of our reading, the bitterness, the struggle, and we can all identify with that. But the second part introduces the sense of some hope being there. C.S. Lewis once wrote in his great book, The Problem of Pain, God whispers to us in our pleasures, speaks to us in our consciences, but shouts to us in our pain. It is his megaphone to rouse a deaf world. And everything begins to change when God inspires a young female foreigner named Ruth to stick with her mother-in-law. You could look with me at verse 16. Ruth replies, "Don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I'll be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you from me." And it's in Ruth that we begin to see what Naomi couldn't. God's at work. He somehow developed a great character in that young girl so that she can showcase his love to Naomi. And it's true that although it sometimes takes disasters and pain and bitterness to open our eyes, we still need to see the goodness of God to be given hope. Naomi was only able at this point to see the hand turned against her. Instead, God wants to show her his loving kindness. And the truth is, Naomi is not left alone. She's not left alone by Ruth, and she's not left alone by God. And Ruth is going to show her something of the love and grace of God's character at work in practice. It's an extraordinary little passage, isn't it? What a character, what love and devotion Ruth shows. It's the sort of love that actually this world really needs to see desperately. And it's the sort of love that binds Christians together and which the world at large desperately needs at the moment. It's love like that that shines with God's love in people's needs when they too get desperate. So what can we learn from this chapter? What is this first chapter saying to us today? Well, I think to begin with, it has two warnings. First, the warning not to lose sight of God's eternal and loving plans for us. Perhaps we're having trouble seeing clearly the ways that God is showing his covenant for us, love for us at the moment. Perhaps, as in Naomi's case, we're battling with problems which leave that same sort of bitterness or other deep feelings so up close in our lives that we struggle to see any clear future. Just like in this book, sometimes the problems of life are just so right in your face that you can miss out on seeing the good work of God through it all. But if everything around you seems awful, remember that despite how things may appear through circumstances, God will not have turned his back on you. Look again and see Jesus Christ's love for you. He died on a cross for you. He's not going to leave you alone and without hope, whatever circumstances you're facing. That's the first warning, not to lose sight of God's eternal and loving plans for us. The second one is not to give up on God. Maybe you're new to the church or new to thinking about God at all. You're not sure where your life is going, or you secretly think your past probably means God could not be interested in you anyway. Well, look at Ruth. She has no idea what her future holds. Things of God are new to her. The only example of someone who knows God she's seen is presumably Naomi, and she's only seen that latterly through her depression. But there's still something about Naomi that has shone the light of God for her. And a past? Well, you could hardly imagine a person less likely to be of interest to God than Ruth. She's not one of his chosen people. She's never been to the land that worships him. Life is a bit of a mess for her too. Her husband has also died, and she's still coming to terms with that. She's got no great prospects. What could there be in her that would merit God's interest? And yet here she is, with a book of the Bible named after her, an example of God's amazing love and concern for the least likely of people, perhaps even someone like you. Don't give up on God. Then there's a challenge. Maybe Ruth 1 is there to challenge us all to look in the places that we might not expect to find the work of Jesus Christ. You can look at Ruth and see only another impoverished, grieving, prospectless foreigner living in an obscure part of the Middle East at a time of famine, with little to offer, humanly speaking. Many people get dismissed for that. They may feature occasionally in charity appeals, but that's about it. Well, the challenge is that in Jesus Christ, as the New Testament says, there is no Greek or Jew, male or female, slave or free. Nobody is unimportant. Everybody is important. And this book is going to tell the story of God taking someone from very humble, even dire circumstances, and showing what his grace can do with a life given to him. That may be a challenge for us personally, not just to think how God may see me, but to look how I view others, not dismiss them. For Ruth, for Naomi, it didn't matter that Ruth was a girl from Moab. And God wasn't worried. He was going to show his goodness to her and through her. Perhaps today we need to look at the person that we would often overlook as a person either God would want me to love, or whom God may be using to show his love to me, if I could but open my eyes. How amazing when you think of these humble beginnings. Well, God is a God of surprises. So that's a challenge. Then there's an example. Ruth is an amazing example of faith. Let me read that commitment again in verse 16. Ruth says, "Your people will be my people and your God my God." What an extraordinary thing to say. She makes a commitment not only to Naomi, you can understand that. She's built a friendship with her. She already loves her. But she makes a commitment to God himself. What a thing. Lots of people back off from that commitment. Oh, I don't know enough. My life's in such a mess. I can't possibly be of interest to God. But not Ruth. And that unshakable commitment is going to be the key to the story as it unfolds. You may not know this, but actually, it's no small part that Ruth plays in God's plans. In fact, they touch not just her immediate relationships with such as Naomi, but they stand as part of God's overall plan of salvation for the world. They even have a place in the Christmas story. Matthew chapter 1, verse 5 tells us that Ruth actually stands in Jesus' human family tree. Her son was Obed, who had a grandson, Jesse, and a great-grandson, King David. And so the family continues right on down to Jesus himself. In other words, she has a key role in God's whole unfolding plan for the salvation of the world. Isn't that remarkable? A girl of such humble origins, but someone who gave herself to God. My God will be your God. Who can say what God can do for the example of someone committed to him in faith? Ruth gives us that example. And finally, I suppose the passage for me challenges me to make a choice. We've had warnings, we've had examples, we've had a challenge. We now have a choice. When life just gets absolutely terrible, Ruth could have just gone with her sister-in-law, Orpah, and found a different husband from her own land. She could have lived a safe and comfortable life. But she stepped up. She allowed God to use her to make a difference in her own life and in the life of Naomi. She challenges us to take a risk by walking with God. All we have to do is turn to God, to step up, make a commitment, to live for him, wherever that takes us. And that's a pretty bold thing to say. It would be easy, especially at the moment, to find reasons to keep our heads down. We're in lockdown. What can we do? But Ruth was not held back by any circumstances, any expectations, any fears. She simply took up the challenge to be there for Naomi and to let God lead the way in her life, wherever that might take her. There's a choice for us. Will we do that? And you know what? Many in our world at the moment are experiencing the same depths of bitterness that Naomi was and could do with someone who gives them that sort of example. It's often in the very tough times that people need a friend, an inspiration, someone to stand there for them, to be with them, to shine the light of God for them and to show them a supreme example of the unfathomable love of God in action. So would you choose to be the person who will follow God and take the risk of placing your life in his hands? The letter of Ruth is going to give us an example of the results of that faith in action, of God's transforming love at work. He's actually the one who can turn our despair into hope, our bitterness, which is the key thing, into trust, and our sadness to everlasting joy. So tune in next week. See chapter 2 and follow the story.